Okay, thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be here today to discuss with you some of the research that we've been working on at the National Cancer Institute related to examining total sugar sweetened beverage consumption using an advanced methodology. And this, the work I'm presenting today is from my postdoctoral training, as Dan had mentioned, and currently I'm an epidemiologist at Exponent. So to begin, there are a number of reasons as to why research efforts and policy efforts have targeted sugar-sweetened beverages. They are the leading source of added sugars and empty calories in the American diet, and the increasing consumption trend over the past few decades has paralleled the rise in obesity rates, and as such, sugar-sweetened beverages have been identified as an important contributor to the obesity epidemic. And to date, available data indicate that greater SSB intakes lead to higher total daily energy intake as individuals generally fail to compensate for these extra liquid calories. Overall, poor diet quality and lower intakes of key vitamins and minerals. And in addition to increased risk of obesity, long-term weight gain, available data also indicate that greater intakes of sugar-sweetened beverages contribute to increased risk of diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and cardiovascular disease. And in light of this increasing accumulating scientific evidence between sugar-sweetened beverage consumption and adverse health outcomes, a number of public health policy efforts have targeted sugar-sweetened beverages. Most have been in school settings, but there have been some that have been introduced and in some cases passed outside of the school setting. And as Dan had mentioned, a very timely and relevant regulation related to my talk today is the recently passed regulation related to sugar-sweetened beverages greater than 16 ounces in New York City. And I just want to note this is, as of now, effective as of March 12, 2013. So how we define sugar-sweetened beverages matters and is very relevant to developing public health policies, designing interventions, evaluating relationships between SSBs and health outcomes, and assimilating the research to date. However, there's no single one universally agreed upon definition of sugar-sweetened beverages. Therefore, differential definitions have been used. Soda or carbonated soft drinks or pop, depending on where you're from, sometimes has been investigated alone. Other definitions have included fruit drinks or ready-to-drink iced teas, and in some cases flavored milks or sports drinks and energy drinks and other various combinations. And then some definitions have included only those SSBs that are sold at certain locations. And so in light of these challenges in terms of defining sugar-sweetened beverages, we were very interested at the NCI working in the Risk Factor Monitoring and Methods branch in sort of tackling some of these methodological challenges. And one important challenge is determining what should be classified as a sugar-sweetened beverage. Is it any beverage with any added sugar, only those that reach a certain threshold of added sugar, or perhaps only those that provide no or limited nutritional value? For example, what about fruit drinks that have some 100% juice in them, or flavored milks that may have chocolate syrup but also have that also provide milk? And then what about those beverages that are calorically sweetened after purchase? So coffee, for instance, where sugar was added after purchase. In addition, an additional consideration is which estimates to provide. Should we look at total calories from these sugar-sweetened beverages, or perhaps only focus on the calories from added sugars that contribute the empty calories? And as you may imagine, there's no one answer, and the answers likely depend on the research question or policy objective, perhaps limitations of available data or other constraints, and also consideration of the main construct of interest. So for this project that I'm discussing today, we had a few specific objectives. The first was to estimate the calories Americans consume from added sugars from all types of sugar-sweetened beverages. And this includes ready-to-drink beverages as well as those that are calorically sweetened after purchase, and these beverages have not been examined in past studies. We also wanted to identify the top sources of these calories coming from sugar-sweetened beverages. And in light of the recently passed regulation in New York City, we wanted to determine the percentage of Americans consuming SSBs greater than 16 ounces according to different definitions of sugar sweetened. For this study, we used data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Study, or NHANES, 2005 to 2008. And this is a nationally representative cross-sectional survey conducted annually by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We included all participants over the age of, or 2 years and older, and we had a sample of over 17,000 participants. We used the first day of in-person 24-hour dietary recalls. And to obtain values of added sugars, we used the USDA's, or United States Department of Agriculture's, Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion's My Pyramid Equivalent Database, or MPED, and accompanying addendum. So for our all-inclusive SSB definition, we included any beverage containing any caloric sweetener, either as purchased or ready to drink, as well as those that were sweetened after purchase. And as we found, there were a number of different caloric sweeteners that were added to beverages that would convert a beverage from being unsweetened to sugar sweetened. And I just wanted to show some of these examples. Some we may already imagine: honey, brown and white sugar, different syrups, flavored malt milk powder, sweetened condensed milk, different chocolate powders, fructose sweetener, molasses, and even ice cream and flavored yogurt when it was used in a beverage, say to make a milkshake or a smoothie, whipped topping when it was used in a beverage like a coffee drink. So one of the unique contributions of our work is that we were able to look at these combination beverages. And to do so, we used two NHANES variables. The first was the combination food number, and this flags items that are consumed together, so we know if sugar is added to coffee or if it is used in a baked good, for instance. And then also the combination food type, which designates the combination category, and there's a category of beverages with additions, which was very useful. And then for each sugar-sweetened beverage, we assigned it to only one of nine categories as opposed to being separated into the component parts, and this was based on our main objectives. And we assigned beverages based on gram weight, so whichever of the components had the larger gram weight, the beverage was assigned to that category, with one exception, which was when a calorically sweetened beverage combination with had any alcohol, it went to the sweetened alcoholic beverage category, because oftentimes the alcohol was the smaller of the gram weight, but we wanted to be able to represent and show how many sweetened alcoholic beverages Americans were consuming. So although we had roughly 20 categories at the beginning, we did collapse some categories based on small sizes in some of these groups, and so we ended up with nine mutually exclusive categories. And I just want to note the categories here are only those that were with caloric sweeteners, not artificial sweeteners. So we had soda and fruit drinks. This included drinks with some that had some 100% juice in them, sweetened coffee, sweetened tea, energy and sports drinks, vitamin-enhanced waters, flavored milk, flavored dairy alternatives, and sweetened alcoholic beverages. And just to show how our method differs from past methods, I wanted to provide a few examples of the beverages within the flavored milk category. So our category captured both those flavored milks that are ready to drink and homemade. So when chocolate syrup was added to milk at home, we would capture that. So also hot chocolate prepared with milk, milkshakes, and eggnog. And similarly with sweetened coffee, we captured those ready-to-drink coffee drinks and then also those that were sweetened after purchase. So for our first question, how many calories from added sugars in SSBs did Americans consume on average using our all-inclusive definition? And first, just to orient you to this graph, on the y-axis we have the calories from added sugars, and then on the x-axis we have the different age groups. Blue is for males and red is females. And when we look at males first, we see that when we're looking at only the calories from added sugars, that male adolescents, as they stand out on this graph, are consuming almost 300 calories a day just from added sugars. And then adults aged 20 to 39 follow closely behind with 289 calories per day. And we do see kind of a similar pattern among women, but the intakes are lower in all age groups. And then our next question, what were the leading sources of calories from added sugars and SSBs among Americans from 2005 to 2008? And so the next series of slides will be pie charts depicting that depict the distribution of calories from added sugars across SSB categories. And among all Americans, 170 calories were from added sugars were consumed on average from SSBs. And the leading source, as you might imagine, was soda, 55%, followed by fruit drinks, sweetened tea, sweetened coffee, energy sports drinks, flavored milks, and then this other category, because it was such a small percentage, I just grouped those together for this slide. And I just wanted to highlight three of these categories, because these are categories that in previous studies likely weren't accounted for, at least accounted for as comprehensively as we did, because a lot of the sweetened coffee and flavored milk and sweetened teas are sweetened after purchase. Now looking at young children ages 2 to 5, we see they consume 91 calories from added sugars and SSBs. This is still a significant amount as their total caloric intake would be lower. We see the leading contributor is fruit drinks, followed by soda, and then flavored milk, energy and sports drinks, sweetened tea, and then a small other category. And I wanted to highlight fruit drinks here because this is the leading contributor to calories from added sugars and SSBs. And I think it raises an interesting question as to whether or not perhaps fruit drinks are perceived as a healthier option when in reality fruit drinks often have the same amount of added sugar, if not more in some cases, than soda. But fruit drinks are also marketed a bit differently and sometimes have claims such as being real or natural, or if they've been fortified with vitamin C, for instance, that's highlighted. So I think this is just an interesting question to think about. Now looking at children ages 6 to 11, they consumed 157 calories on average from added sugars on any given day. The top source was soda, followed by fruit drinks, flavored milk, energy sports drinks, sweetened tea, and then a small other category. And then looking at adolescents, we see they consumed, this is males and females combined, 245 calories from added sugars and SSBs, and soda contributed 59% of those calories, followed by fruit drinks, energy and sports drinks was 9%, sweetened tea, flavored milk, and again, another category. And then our last question was how many Americans consumed SSBs larger than 16 ounces, 2005 to 2008, according to different definitions of sugar sweetened. And SSBs, as defined in the NYC regulation, include those larger than 16 ounces, non-alcoholic, pre-sweetened by the manufacturer or establishment, contain more than 25 calories per 8 ounces, less than 50% milk or milk substitute, and sold at city-regulated food service establishments, including restaurants, mobile food carts, delis, not those sold at supermarkets, grocery stores, or convenience stores, as those are state-regulated. And so we used three different definitions to assess the impact of how SSBs are defined on the percentage estimates of Americans consuming these beverages larger than 16 ounces. We used our least restrictive all-inclusive definition I previously described, in addition to a more restrictive definition used in the NYC regulation but not accounting for source of purchase, and then our third definition did account for source of purchase, and we used the food source variable in Haynes to do so. And we wanted to look at definition 2 and 3 because this allowed us to determine how targeting only certain food service establishments would affect our estimates. And what we see here is that among all Americans, 31% consumed at least one sugar-sweetened beverage greater than 16 ounces using our all-inclusive, all-encompassing definition. It dropped to 22% when we restricted it to the NYC definition, not accounting for source, and then it fell further to 8%, accounting for source of purchase. And we see a similar pattern among those aged 2 to 19 and those over 20 and older. And then lastly, when looking at adolescents, we see that over 50% of adolescent males consume sugar-sweetened beverage larger than 16 ounces using our all-encompassing definition, and the number only falls slightly to 48% using the NYC definition, not accounting for source of purchase, and it falls further to 17%. We see a similar pattern among women, although the percentages are lower. So what can we conclude from this research? Well, first, Americans consume even more calories from added sugars in SSBs than previously reported using our all-inclusive definition. And using this method allows for more comprehensive estimates of calories from added sugars from all types of SSBs. And lastly, our findings highlight the potential implication of the NYC regulation and also provide useful data, we hope, for planning future public health policy with respect to this issue. And lastly, here's the website from our group at the NCI, where we hope to have, in the very near future, detailed information about this method so that others can implement it fairly easily. And I have a number of individuals I'd like to acknowledge up here. And I'm not sure if we have time now, but I'm happy to take any questions either now, or feel free to email me or my mentor, Jill Reedy, at any point. Thank you. Has the deadline for getting this information on the web been pushed back due to the recent, no, the deadline's not pushed back. We just hope to, you know, it's a work in progress, and we want to make it's fairly complicated to use these variables, the combination, to identify these combination beverages, so we want to make it user-friendly, and that's kind of one of the aims of our group at the NCI, is to provide this information for others to be able to use. So we're working on the SAS code and making it so that it's more of a, you know, one-click kind of situation. Oh, so the NHANES years we used were 2005 to 2008, but we looked at on any given day. Does that answer your question?
So does that mean if they consume one sugar sweetened beverage, then they consume one and a half to 3 years?
Oh, no. So individuals are we just used one day, one 24-hour recall for each individual. And so when you have such a large sample, we make the assumption that this is representing sort of usual intake, and it's nationally representative. So then if an individual were to, when you look at the whole sample, if an individual were to report it, then it would count as consuming a sugar-sweetened beverage greater than 16. Yes? Yeah, actually, and I have those graphs here. In the interest of time, I didn't provide them, but it'll be in our paper and also on our website, because we'll make all of these graphics available on our website and the tables as well, so that others can use this, hopefully, in any way that is helpful to them.
One more question.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Yeah. Across age groups. Was that surprising to you? There didn't seem to be any difference using the NYC definition across age groups.
Right. Well, because for that slide, I showed very broad age groups, 2 to 19 and then 20 plus. But we have it for broken down by all, like 2 to 5 years and 6 to 11. And then we do see differences. And that's why if I had time, I would love to talk about all of this. But that's why I showed adolescents, because it was most striking. We saw that number was higher than 8%. It was maybe 12 or 13%. And there were, there were differences by age. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. All right.